and welcome to The Bunker Daily with me, Yasmin Serhan. If you're an avid listener of The Bunker or our sibling podcast, Oh God, What Now?, you might be aware of the term progressive alliance, the idea that all the left-leaning parties in Britain would team up to beat the Tories in individual constituencies. In Hungary, this idea is happening on an even grander scale, with all parties from the Greens right through to the conservative-leaning Jobbik putting their differences aside to try and defeat Viktor Orban's Fidesz party with the election set for April 3rd this year. But unseating Orban won't be an easy feat. The Hungarian Prime Minister has spent the past 12 years cementing his control over Hungary's public funds, its institutions, and its media ecosystem. Even if the United Opposition were able to form a government, it faces the ever more arduous task of reversing Hungary's democratic decline, one that has seen its institutions undermined, its press freedom curtailed, and its resources exploited by Orban and his allies. Joining me to discuss the upcoming election and what it means for Hungary are David Doros, the former MP turned campaign manager and candidate, and Peter Krecko, director of the Budapest think tank Political Capital Institute. David and Peter, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having us.
So let's just dive right in. And I want to start first with the United Opposition. David, to start with you, what was the thinking behind this United Opposition project? When was the idea first put forward?
Thank you again for having me. And what we have to understand is that Orban has a super majority and a super dominance over the Hungarian politics in the last 12 years. And that means that Orban and his ruling party, Fidesz, changed the constitution. And with this, they changed the electoral system and the electoral rules. What was before a proportional system just became majoritarian electoral system, which explicitly favors Fidesz and explicitly favors governing parties, so Orban's party. So they used this new electoral system twice in 2014 and 2018. And in both cases, they faced a fractured opposition. And the result was very clear that in both times, thanks to the fractured nature of the opposition, they were able to have a supermajority without winning more than 50% of the votes. So it was simple and clear for every opposition party that we have to make an alliance and we have to stand aligned and together against Fidesz based on, naturally, the common criticism we have against Orban with everything he as a turbo populist has done with the rule of law, the crackdown on independent media, and other very important issues. After a longer negotiation period, there was agreement between six opposition parties that they will hold primaries to decide how they cooperate, and we had the first ever Hungarian primaries for parliamentary elections last September, and the turnout was huge, and it was a huge success, and that's the success and the political basis we are building our campaign for the upcoming, as you mentioned, April 3rd election.
Yeah, so David, it sounds like from what you've said that there was as much a political necessity to do this and that the parties are a lot stronger electorally, percentage-wise, together, but also this sense of shared end goal, this notion of unseating Orban and try to sort of reclaim Hungarian democracy from the supermajority that you described. Now, here in the UK, I think it's fair to say that the parties or the country has a hard time convincing, you know, Labour and the Liberal Democrats, which are two centre-left parties, to work together. But the coalition that you've just described spans the entire political spectrum. And I'm wondering, you know, obviously, as you've mentioned, you have a shared goal of unseating Orban, but how does the coalition work with all the other issues that perhaps the parties don't necessarily agree on?
We have put a lot of time, energy, and effort into creating a common platform. We cover all the major issues facing Hungary today, from climate change to inequalities to economic development and the problem of the dismantling of rule of law and the free media. So we have a common project which we will start after winning a majority and forming our government. So the shared values and the shared political policy aims are the basis and the fundamental part of our cooperation and alliance.
You talked about the primaries that the United Opposition held late last year. And I wanted to ask you if you could tell us a bit about Peter Markizai, the candidate that the electorate chose to lead the United Opposition as the prime ministerial candidate. Who exactly is he, and what can you tell us about his background?
Peter Markizai is currently a mayor of a town from southern Hungary. That's one of the 20 biggest towns in the country, and he used to work as a business manager before that. He spent considerable time in living in and working in Canada and the US. And he was the first one who stood as a common candidate against Orbán in his first electoral success as mayor of Hódmezővásárhely. This is the town he currently leads. So he symbolizes the cooperation and how one candidate can beat Orbán, even in a town which could be considered as the heartland of Orbán and Fidesz. So in 2018, when he was first elected, was a breakthrough moment. Building upon this breakthrough moment, he was able to enter the race for the primary race for prime minister candidacy. And he is very energetic and a new voice on the oppositional side. And I think with him, somebody who is coming from the right, so he's not coming from the established social liberal background. So that's something that appeals to a lot of voters on one hand, and on the other hand, caught Fidesz off guard.
Peter, I want to bring you into this. Taking a step back, how important is this election for Hungary?
Yes, first of all, thanks a lot, Jasmine, for having us, and great to discuss these important issues. I think this election is crucially important. I would say that it's the last minute before midnight in Hungary, in the sense that we could observe a very obvious crackdown on democracy in Hungary in the last 12 years. And according to all the institutions that are measuring the quality of democracy, like the Economist Intelligence Unit or Freedom House, Hungary have practically become a hybrid regime, somewhere in between democracy and dictatorship. And we have just abandoned the democratic end. And I still think that the government can be defeated on elections, which is very important. But there are less and less institutional independence in Hungary when it comes to institutions like prosecutor's office, the media authority, the constitutional court, and the list goes on. And the nature of the governance of Viktor Orbán is that he has to occupy more and more space in the institutions, in the economy. And Hungary have practically become a strongly nepotistic state, where this big chunk of the state apparatus is working on making the environment of the prime minister and his allies wealthy. So I do think that at this moment, when, as David have already said, the opposition is united to beat Viktor Orbán, which is a huge achievement, and there are still a lot of, let's say, ideological differences between the players that came together to one front. And this is a necessity. Even before 2010, the Hungarian electoral system combined the elements of the proportional and the majoritarian system. But after the changes of the electoral system that David have already referred to, it became way easier to get a supermajority with less than half of the votes. While in 2010, Fidesz had to gain 53% on the party list to have a constitutional majority. In 2014, 45% was enough. In 2018, 49% was enough. Why is it important? Because contrary to what Viktor Orbán usually says, Hungary does not enjoy the support of the two-thirds of Hungarians. It's far from being true. Less than absolute majority of the voters supported him on the last two elections, but the characteristics of the electoral system make it possible for him to win a supermajority. And right now, there is a big experiment. The opposition came together. There is a convincing candidate. There is a joint campaign. So if it can be successful, then it can give a huge boost to the Hungarian democratic forces, even if the governance will be highly challenging. If not, it would mean that one more hope is lost. And then I do think that Orbán can govern for a longer time. Plus, I would expect a stronger crackdown on democratic institutions if Orbán will remain on power, for the reason that right now he's burning all the reserves he has, economically, diplomatically, and in every sense. And if he wins once again, then he can immediately become quite popular because of some corrective measures and austerity and so on. And if he wants to, let's say, keep the regime safe, I don't think he will have any other chance than to having an even stronger grip on the institutional system.
Sounds like from everything you've just laid out, I mean, you noted at the top that it is still possible for Viktor Orbán to lose an election. But it sounds like over the last 12 years, from everything you just explained, he has tilted the playing field very much in his party's favor.
Exactly. He did his best to make it more difficult that he will be removed from power. And while, for example, the government claims that he's representing the will of the people, even it was made more difficult to have a referendum in certain issues, and the threshold for validity was raised. Probably the most important thing is occupying the media space as well. Orbán have made the most centralized media system in the whole European Union. Even Silvio Berlusconi could be quite envious that he could even never dreamed of a media empire that Orbán has, with a huge media machinery. More than 500 media outlets were put into one huge giga foundation that is parroting the messages of the government, having a political and not a information logic, and spreading fake news and disinformation big time. And this will be a big challenge for the opposition as well. The character of Péter Márki-Zay is a big challenge for Fidesz, and the fact that he is coming from the right and he represents all the values that Fidesz have namely stand for a longer time, it is a big challenge. But Fidesz has the opportunity to create a totally virtual reality out of fake news and state-sponsored disinformation, something similar that we can observe in way less democratic countries like in Russia or Turkey. And the big question is that how much will it be possible to persuade voters that are being a bit entrapped by the governmental media bubble. So yes, Orbán did everything to make it more difficult for the opposition to win. And the opposition has to win at least 3-4 percentage point more on the party list than the government, so to overcome all the distortions of the electoral system. But it is still possible to beat Orbán. And if not And we know it also from the fact that Orbán made quite a lot of measures to save money and institutions for Fidesz in case that they will lose the elections. So they privatized some universities, for example, and put a lot of Fidesz loyalists in their board. They still receive state money, but they are on paper private, which means that he can save his allies and give them jobs, even if he will be in opposition. You don't do these measures if you feel that you're totally confident that you can win.
At the beginning of the pandemic, some of Europe's leaders were accused of using the crisis to bolster their power and clamp down on dissent. How did Orbán use the pandemic to his advantage, and how concerned are you that he may further weaponize this during the campaign, whether it's by, you know, say, restricting rallies or things like that?
Orbán have abused the situation as much as he could so far with introducing extraordinary legal situations where there is less control over his power, less supervision as well. And at the same time, it's easier to make decisions without parliamentary control. Plus, he also used the opportunity that people are more concerned about their own lives and how to survive the pandemic than about corruption, for example. And we can clearly see in the figures that good investigative journalists in Hungary collected that the distribution of the public money and the winning public tenders by companies and people close to Orbán himself have totally accelerated from the beginning of the crisis and the pandemic. And also Orbán used the opportunity to accelerate his reorientation towards the East. For example, there was a big project about which there is an agreement. This is Budapest-Belgrade railway line built by Chinese loans, finally by Hungarian taxpayers for an awful lot of money. And also at least half of the companies that are doing the project will be Chinese companies. The other half of the companies will be close to Viktor Orbán himself. And this is just one example out of the many. I think we can already say that Orbán have used the pandemic big time. I don't know how much they will be able to do that during the elections. And what is rather surprising, I would say that Hungary is a country where the mortality out of COVID is one of the highest. And still, more than 40,000 people have died in a country of 10 million. And still, Orbán's popularity is more or less on the same level. So the government is not necessarily interested into, let's say, going to lockdowns and more restrictive measures about the pandemic, because if they put it at the top of the agenda, it can be a quite dangerous topic for their popularity and image.
Going back to what I think both of you talked about with regard to the Hungarian media and press freedom, David, how have you sort of seen Orbán use the media during the election campaign so far? And in particular with regard to Peter Markizai, I'm curious if there's been any sort of attempts at kind of like a smear campaign targeting him. I guess what I really am asking is there a smear campaign underway?
Yes, and it will only be enhanced by Orbán and his media team. So they will use everything they have in their classic playbook. So the opposition will be portrayed as foreign agents. They will be portrayed as political parties who want to bring back austerity. They have been building up institutions and online media outlets, especially dedicated to that purpose. And as you have mentioned, they have a total control of the state media, and they have around, through Orbán-leaning oligarchs and other economic circles, around 70-75% dominance of non-state media. and they have put a lot of effort and energy into create an almost impenetrable media bubble around their constituents and around the Fidesz voter base. So no criticism of Orban and no criticism of the governing party reaches approximately 2-2.5 million people who form the voter base of Orban. So they have total control of the narrative among those people. So in that respect, it is very hard for the opposition to reach those voters who are following Orban almost like a cult. So we have a very difficult task, and it's an uphill battle that we are fighting. But still, we believe that these things could be overcome, and there are voters out there that could be reached by opposition messages.
Peter, on the same day as the election, there's also a referendum on the controversial LGBTQ law that came up last year. What will this law do if it gets approval from the people?
This law, or this referendum, is practically about a totally non-existent problem in Hungary. Why the government is painting the bogeyman of LGBTQ propaganda that makes the youngsters and children unaware or uncertain about their gender identity, and then they go to gender changing surgeries and things like that. This topic, I would say, is in Hungary practically unknown, and the whole problem in Hungary is almost unknown. So Fidesz first has to explain what the hell is gender-changing surgery for its voters before making them scared of that. And also, by all the disinformation in Hungary, it seems like in Western countries, people are simply not aware of their gender identity anymore. As Orban said recently in one of his speeches, while Hungarians will not froze in the winter, unlike the Westerns, he said, because of the high energy prices, Hungary keeps them low. According to this narrative, in the West, fathers can give birth to children as well. So that's the narrative that is emerging about not just gender issues, but about the whole West in Brussels, in the European Union, but also in the UK and the US. This topic is the most important, and he is fighting his crusade to save children, as he says, and to save the traditional values. In fact, as far as I know, but I'm not a legal expert, I have to tell, if this referendum is passed, it would not change that much in the legal landscape in Hungary. There was a restriction already that the underaged, so the children cannot meet practically with any material that is putting homosexuality in a positive light, which is quite a restrictive measure. So this law is not so important in legal terms, but it is very important in political terms. Election will be also a huge test of how much the Hungarian voters and the right-wing voters resonate to a topic that is practically almost unknown in Hungary, and it's a pseudo topic, but the government uses this bogeyman of pedophiles and the bogeyman of gender ideology to fuel hatred against gay people in Hungary, and this is a serious issue.
Orban has spoken quite openly about his belief that the international left, as he call it, will interfere in the election, in some ways seemingly echoing Donald Trump's claims of electoral fraud ahead of the 2020 U.S. presidential race. How confident are you that Orban will accept the results of the election if he were to lose? And how likely do you think it is that he actually could lose this time around?
I think that there is a high chance that he can lose the elections. And my prediction would be, but probably I'm a bit too optimistic, in this case, he would acknowledge losing the election, but at the same time, radicals on the side of Fidesz, and there are quite many, even among the intellectuals, would raise serious questions about the legitimacy of the elections. So I definitely think that in a regime that conditioned its voters to conspiracy theories for 12 years, it's not so easy to lose elections. And Orbán have already, and the right-wing media have started to build a narrative. And the narrative is that Brussels, the European Union, and the United States is interfering into the elections. So while in most of the Western countries, leaders are talking about the possibility of Russian and Chinese influence into the political system, Hungary is afraid of Western influence. But this narrative is being built. What we know is that Orbán have lost already an election back to 2002, and the transition of power happened rather smoothly. I don't think that you can really arrange a coup, for example, in the middle of the European Union. But I would expect tensions, and I would expect that the hardcore supporters of the right would definitely go to the streets, and we could maybe imagine, I don't want to paint the devil on the wall, but probably similar scenes that we could see at the 6th of January 2021 in the Capitol Hill.
David Doros and Peter Krakow, thank you all so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot, Jasmine.
And thank you for listening to The Bunker. If you enjoyed this episode, you can back us on the crowdfunding app Patreon. Just search Patreon Bunker Podcast to find out more. We'll be back soon with another episode of The Bunker Daily. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.
The Bunker Daily was presented by Yasmin Saran. The group editor was Andrew Harrison. The lead producer was Jacob Jarvis. And the producers were Jacob Archbold, Yelena Sofronievich, and me, Alex Rees. Theme tune by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.